This episode is brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Harness powerful crop solutions using technology derived from nature. Products from the Acceleron BioAg brand are bioenhancers, primarily containing live microbial organisms. The products help promote increased nutrient and water availability for better yield potential. Acceleron BioAg product offerings are available for canola, wheat, corn, soybean, pulses, and more. Visit AcceleronBioAg.ca for product information and to view BioAdvantage trial results from growers like you. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we feature a NAFTA 2.0 panel with insights from Al Mussel of Agri-Food Economic Systems, Ed White, reporter with The Western Producer, and Bruce Burnett of Markets Farm. What could be in store for trade? We'll find out. Then we'll touch base with Dave Sims of Commodity News Service Canada for his take on the markets.
So the leading culprit for the shortfall obviously seems to be tied to the lack of rain during the summer.
That's all on Between the Rows with this week's host, Robert Arneson.
Hi, I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer, and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. First up on today's show, many Canadian farmers, and rightly so, are nervous about the future of NAFTA. The U.S. and Mexico announced a bilateral trade deal in the last week of August, putting pressure on Canada to make concessions and agree to terms on NAFTA 2.0. No one knows what will happen next, but joining us to talk about the trade chaos is Al Mussel, the founder of Agri-Food Economic Systems, an economic research group in Guelph, Ontario. Hi, Al, and thanks for coming on Between the Rows.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rob.
So, as you know, the negotiators for Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. are in Washington right now, trying to finalize the terms for NAFTA 2.0. Can you just sort of remind us of the key issues for Canadian farmers in these talks?
Yeah, sure. I guess there's kind of a range of them. The front burner issue obviously is dairy, of concern for dairy farmers. The U.S. Enunciated concerns over what they said was supply management, which obviously would go broader than dairy. But the understanding is that really the core discussions are around dairy, so that's a real front burner issue, and it's actually kind of got equivocated or raised in its significance to be right up there along with dispute resolution and some other issues. So that's one ag issue. A second ag issue is just the prospect that the U.S. may suddenly withdraw from NAFTA and go with this U.S.-Mexico agreement, which they negotiated about a week and a half ago. That's a concern for Canadian producers, particularly in the horticultural segments and also in our markets for certain processed foods where you would run into significant tariffs that would apply that don't currently apply, as well as irritants in a range of other products such as cattle, grains, et cetera. These would create new costs. So that aspect is a concern. A third element are what I'll call more regulatory issues, and these range from things like approvals of pesticide products in Canada and the U.S., animal health products, also some long-running irritants, things like deliveries of grain for varieties approved in the United States but not approved in Canada to Canadian elevators. I guess, you know, the final piece of concern is, I guess, perhaps more general even than NAFTA, is to the extent that this becomes part of an ongoing and broader trade war, you know, what does that do to the world economy and the demand for foods and products that, that we would sell both at home and abroad?
Okay, so just shifting to dairy, which you sort of highlighted as one of the key issues here, is, you know, most trade analysts say that Canada will have to make some concessions on dairy. What, in your mind, could that look like?
I would expect that the approach of the Canadian negotiators will be to try and accommodate U.S. demands as best they can. Some of the U.S. demands, I think, were probably viewed as extreme, such as, you know, getting rid of supply management. They in the fall of 2017, they asked for, I may not have the percentages exactly right, but I'm going to say it was increases in market access of 5% per year, which translated to 100% access within 10 years. And the U.S. wanted a veto over changes in Canadian policy that dealt with supply managed products.
Okay.
I believe those were probably rejected out of hand. The U.S. also has objected to Canadian Class 7. That would be, in my understanding of it, very difficult and painful for Canada to simply concede on. You know, perhaps there's some technical discussions they can have around the fringes of it, but I would imagine probably most likely will be Canada will look at market access concessions, similar perhaps to what they gave in the original TPP that the U.S. was going to be a part of. And, of course, the U.S. later left. The same concessions exist in CPTPP, but there may be a desire to offer that. Dairy farmers won't be pleased about that at all. I think they believe that they kept the same levels of concession, even though the U.S. left the TPP agreement, so they may feel like they're being somewhat singled out here, and they probably have a case on that. But those are some of the general sort of parameters, I think, that are at play.
Okay. So another issue that's received a lot of media attention is this whole topic of Chapter 19, which is, I guess, described as sort of a dispute resolution mechanism or process. Is this something that's critical for Canada's ag industry, or is it something that we can live without?
So Chapter 19 deals with trilateral reviews, independent reviews of countries, countervailing duty and anti-dumping duty laws that are enacted in specific cases. And Canada insisted on that, I think, going back to Canada-U.S. trade agreement, out of the concern that the U.S. would want to be aggressive in using its countervail and anti-dumping laws against Canada. So with regard to the actual use of, and I guess just to back up, and of course, we have some experience in anti-dumping and countervail cases with the United States, so we can think back on hogs, cattle, greenhouse tomatoes, wheat. I'm sure there's others that I'm not remembering. So we have a lot of experience with this. So I do think it's important. And if you go and look through the list of cases that have been heard under Chapter 19, there are a number of farm product and food cases. So that to some extent shows that it is important in having that third party review.
Okay. Thanks, Al. Can you stay on the line for a few minutes? I want to bring in a couple other voices into our NAFTA conversation. So join us now is Bruce Burnett, Director of Markets and Weather Information for Glacier Farm Media. He's going to be here to talk about, just as Al was, about the NAFTA negotiations happening in Washington this week. So, Bruce, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be here.
So, I guess I'm just sort of wondering, sort of a general question here, you know, what are you watching most closely when it comes to the NAFTA discussions that are ongoing right now?
Well, I think Al brought up the politics around this, and I think that's
eventually going to be the chief thing that drives the negotiating process this week and maybe into the next few weeks here on the U.S. side. I think it's very important to note, again, the irritants that we're looking at between the two countries are probably relatively minor in the big scheme of trade flows. But again, they're nonetheless very important, and they're very important in the U.S. side politically. Again, the dairy side, Trump won Wisconsin in the last election. He feels he needs to deliver something for the people who voted him there. So that's why the focus is on the dairy side. Again, this has been a long-term focus of the U.S., supply management, that type of thing. But certainly it's probably a bit more focused right now on that. The grain issues as well. There's a very important Senate race in North Dakota where the incumbent, who's a Democrat, Heidi Heitkamp, is going to be challenged in a very close election, I think, here. And again, North Dakota voted fairly much for Trump during the last election. So it's no surprise that we see some of these issues popping up. I think the thing that we have to look at here, though, is, again, from the U.S. side of things, they're focused on this. But in terms of grain export restrictions, the U.S. also has grain export restrictions on the elevator side from Canadian grain going in. So you have to wonder whether some of these things are on the table at all. Their dairy industry is, again, highly subsidized, and the markets certainly have government intervention there. I would doubt that they're putting those things on the table. So I think, again, Canadian negotiators will be well-informed in this and be bringing these points up. So it will be interesting to see. There is a lot of pressure on the president to deliver something to Congress to get a win. And I would imagine that Congress certainly wants to see Canada in the bill. So I think there is a lot of pressure on the U.S. side to come to an agreement here. Unfortunately, this is not a very predictable process. I think that's the one thing we've learned from President Trump is that these events are probably going to be quite random here as we go forward in this final negotiation.
So, Bruce, just a quick follow-up here. So we obviously talked about dairy earlier in the conversation here with Al Mussel. What are your expectations around dairy? Do you think Canada can maintain its Class 7 category, or is that really a sticking point here in your mind?
Again, I think I agree with Al in that, the Canadian position will be largely around granting some additional tariff-free quota, market access. In terms of the Class 7, that's probably a line that our negotiators are not willing to cross. And I think the U.S. is fairly aware of the political consequences. Ironically, right now we have a Quebec election going on, and that's already come up here, is what are the federal government negotiating in terms of the dairy policy? And the Quebec government obviously does not want significant or large changes to dairy policy in Canada here. Although, again, I think most dairy farmers are realistic that, some give will have to be made here to make an agreement.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce. I'm going to bring one more voice into the conversation here around NAFTA. Now joining us from Winnipeg is Ed White, a reporter with the Western Producer. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. So you sent me an email the other day kind of saying that Trump really has no interest in a win-win-win trade deal Instead, he really wants to claim victory over his trade rivals. Can you sort of expand upon what you meant there?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Canadians and probably Mexicans, and as there's always this attempt to talk about, as Chrystia Freeland, our foreign minister, said, a win-win-win situation, but that doesn't at all seem to be the way Donald Trump looks at trade. He seems to see it as a competition in which you either win or lose. And I think looking at everything he's said and every way he's acted, what he needs is to be able to claim a victory on something. And that means a victory over us in some way. And so I think we need to understand that there's going to have to be some concessions made on something, which he can turn around and plausibly claim as a great big victory over these dastardly Canadians who have abused them, as he says, using that word in the past. And then hopefully he can turn his attention off of us and pivot to China, which is probably the real target for Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. trade representative.
So, as you said, Canada will have to make some sort of concession. You know, what in your mind would be sort of a best case scenario, something we have to give up but won't necessarily like devastate dairy farmers or our economy? What do you see as a concession that makes sense?
Yeah, well, that's a tough one, isn't it? Because whatever the concession is, it's going to hurt somebody specifically and differently. So whether it's the Chapter 19, well, that would be a worry for a lot of our ag exporting industries of Western Canada. You know, that could come up in various future actions the U.S. sometimes takes against us. And that would be worrying to give up. On the other hand, if they focus on trying to protect as much as they can of supply management, well, yeah, that... or if there are concessions made on supply management that very much undermines the sustainability of the dairy system in Canada, as Al Mussel has well analyzed in the past, and we've done stories with him about, say, if Class 7 is given up or backed off or limited, the sustainability of Canada's dairy industry is undermined because there's a great surplus of milk protein products, which we're having trouble being cleared in the market, and we're facing American imports through basically a loophole until Class 7 was evolved. So to give that up would really cut into the dairy industry. But then if just a slice of the Canadian market with the TRQ would be offered to the Americans, I mean, again, Canada's dairy system would have to, in a way, downscale to allow for more foreign product coming in. So I think there's a lot of bad choices, and this is not going to be, as you were just asking me about, a win-win-win. There's going to be some losses here without really any gains if we manage to save a deal.
So Al Mussel, to shift to you for a second here. So what do you think of what Ed just said? Is there any best case scenario, or is it just all downside for Canada's agricultural sector?
Well, as always, I think Ed's comments are prescient. President Trump, as far as I can tell, has no grand design for how North American trade or global trade should work. And in consideration of that, you know, following some path through his negotiators on how to deal with Canada. I think Ed's dead right. And that's got to be an advantage for us. Our negotiators, in my understanding of it, our negotiators are not just good, they are the best. And we are very, very fortunate to have a lead trade negotiator who came from Agriculture Canada and knows the ag file and the supply managed file like nobody else. So, you know, there are ways in which we may be able to be clever to, in a sense, at the margins at least, offer some things on the table that maybe were going to happen anyway, or we can actually provide to them and with some appearance of benefit, if not tangible benefit, at really very little cost to us. So I think the fact that the president just wants to win and doesn't even really care about the specifics much that's got to be a real advantage to us. Now, with that said, I think Ed's right. The focus is on dairy, if for no other reason. We don't have many other things in the ag and food area which are protected. So, you know, I think the dairy industry and perhaps other poultry supply management industries may feel like they're being picked on, but the reality is, like, you know, look at the rest of the farm economy. Where are the major elements of protection or trade distortion? Well, there really aren't any. So it's natural that they're going to want to go there.
Okay. Thanks, Al. Just throw it to you now, Bruce. So I guess, do you see any kind of path forward here where there would be minimal damage to Canada's economy? And are you hopeful that that could happen?
Well, I think Al and Ed both bring up the important point, like that Trump needs to display a win. And I think at the margins, there's probably, you know, a win in this for Trump if we can have some concessions on the dairy side. Long term, that is going to cause some pain, even in the short term, perhaps. But as Al said, like, there's really very few other areas where there's major disputes. There's always going to be some minor disputes here. But for the Canadian file, I don't think there's an awful lot. Chapter 19 does worry me, and I think that may be the critical point, not only just for the ag industry, but for everyone. Every sector, I think, in the Canadian economy might be somewhat worried by this. It's interesting to note that the U.S. also uses Chapter 19, and really, the courts have been the Chapter 19 tribunal have been pretty fair, I think, in examining this. Of course, the U.S. would like to have the home court advantage, shall we say? Pardon the pun, but. I think, again, if there's something that makes the agreement not come through here, I think it's probably going to be Chapter 19 and not the dairy side of things. I think there's probably an agreement there to be had that Trump can declare a victory. But anyway, as I said earlier, you just don't know with this president what he views as a victory and what he doesn't is something that I would be more concerned about.
All right. Well, on that note, thanks to all you for appearing on today's episode of Between the Rows. My guest today, who participated in our conversation on NAFTA 2.0, we were joined by Al Mussel, the founder of Agri-Food Economic Systems in Guelph, Ontario. We also spoke with Bruce Burnett, Glacier Farm Media Director of Weather and Markets Information. And finally, Ed White, a reporter with the Western Producer. Thanks to all of you. This is Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer. Next up on the show, August was a rough month for wheat futures as prices in Minneapolis dropped by about 70 cents per bushel. Here to talk about what happened and what may happen next is Dave Sims, a reporter with Commodity News Service Canada. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Robert.
Thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it as always. So, before we talk about wheat, maybe we should have take a quick look at the canola market. What's been happening in the last little while, and what are you watching for over the month, over the next month or so?
Well, the news in canola recently, of course, was the Statistics Canada production report. I actually only talked to one farmer who thought canola was going to be that low, like the 19.2 million ton forecast, which is below last year's 21.3. So, and I mean, the leading culprit for that shortfall obviously seems to be tied to the lack of rain during the summer. And to a lesser extent, that heat blast we got in the third week of August. No one seems entirely sure what the yields will be so far, But we talked to like a few traders, and what we've heard is yields have been better than expected in Manitoba. I talked to one guy who farms near Winnipeg, and he told me he cleared 51 bushels an acre. But then he noted there was another farmer not that far down the road from him who actually abandoned one of his fields because he hadn't gotten the rains. Southern Saskatchewan seems to be worse than expected, but as the harvest is moving north, it's looking better. And they're thinking that, you know, there could be some areas that are better than expected. Over in Alberta, Alberta suffered from dryness probably worse than anyone, so that's taken a toll. But recently it's been cool and wet, with some temperatures even dipping into the minuses. So that is delaying the harvest, and that's raising some pretty big question marks. Kind of from, a pricing market standpoint, the report that we got on Friday, it sent canola futures higher. The November contract, which is the main contract in canola that's being traded right now, it was actually under the $490 mark before the report, but afterward it shot toward 500. And it might have broken 500, but it kind of ran into harvest pressure. And there is technical resistance at the $500 mark. So, you know, 500 is kind of a key number these days. And soybeans are influencing that, too. The soybean crop in the U.S. looks like it could be record large. The recent farm tour pegged it at 53 bushels an acre, which was pretty strong. And there seems to be some ideas growing that farmers in the U.S. may actually be tempted to plant even more soybeans because of that aid package that the U.S. government gave them. I think the subsidy for soybean farmers starts $1.65 a bushel on the first 50% of production for 2018. So, you know, there's definitely some bearish headwinds there for oil seeds.
So just changing gears, maybe we can talk about wheat for a little bit here. So, you know, I'm sure you know, August was a difficult month for wheat futures. What were the factors that pushed prices lower?
Well, recently, it seems to be tied to, there's obviously drought problems in other parts of the world, but some of the export news, there were, hopes last month that Ukraine was going to, severely limit their wheat exports, and that turned out not to be the case. And then very recently, Russia, there were hopes that Russia was going to limit its wheat exports. And on Tuesday, September 4th, wheat just dropped another 20 cents because Russia decided not to limit their wheat exports. And that was surprising because, obviously the Black Sea region has been really hard by drought. But despite this, Russia has been exporting wheat at kind of a frantic pace. And weakness in the Russian ruble has really made their wheat a whole lot cheaper than U.S. supplies. So U.S. wheat is looking kind of expensive these days, especially when we compare it to the supplies coming out of the Black Sea region. So that's, obviously been kind of a main sticking point.
Is there a fear that wheat prices could fall further, or have we kind of hit the bottom here? What's your sense of that?
Well, I think NAFTA is just creating a headache in general for agricultural markets because, there's certainly a lot of uncertainty there. So, I don't think that's helping. As far as U.S. going forward, I would sense that hopefully we've seen the bottom mark. Like if we were to drop below $5 a bushel, then I think all bets are off. But so far, despite the bearishness, at least Chicago wheat has been holding above the $5 mark, which has been pretty important, keeping the ship, relatively righted, I guess we could say.
What about the other major crop in the U.S., corn? Is there anything new or interesting there that you're keeping track of?
It seems to be one of the quieter markets right now. It's been chopping around lately, kind of hanging around that $3.56 to $3.67 trading range. The trade deal between Mexico and the U.S. was a pretty welcome sign, though. Recent U.S. export numbers have been really lukewarm, so I think people are hoping this will give future shipments a shot in the arm. And farmers in the Corn Belt are running into one problem. They're trying to sell a lot of old crop corn right now because they're trying to, clear out their bins before this year's harvest. But elevator space seems to be a bit of a problem, as like a lot of terminals in the U.S. are still full of soybeans, and they're there because of an inability to sell them to China because of all these trade tariffs. So we'll see what happens with space going forward for corn.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. I've been speaking with Dave Sims, a reporter with Commodity News Service Canada. That's it for this edition of Between the Rows, the first one of September. I'm Robert Arneson of The Western Producer. Thanks for listening.
Today's program was brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Acceleron BioAg products harness the powerful technology of nature to release soil-bound nutrients, helping promote nutrient availability at the plant root. Accelerate crop performance with powerful bioenhancers aimed at promoting nutrient and water uptake and improved yield potential. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.